Monday, June 8th through Saturday, June 13th. And this year we will have Camp Piasaw.
That's the good one. So that camp is a whole lot more disability accessible. So if you have trouble moving around or navigating the trails or whatever, it's a whole lot easier at Piasaw. And the pool is also a lot easier on little guys. And so there's a zero entry pool. So if you have little bitties, it's really good for that.
Mm-hmm. Our first planning meeting will be on February 1st following the service. Everyone's welcome. We're gonna answer questions first. So if you just have some curiosity about Camp Fest, come talk to us and then we'll have our first official planning meeting. Everyone's welcome.
And please feel free to ask either one of us or any of the other people who've been to or helped with Camp Fest. We will always give you lots of information. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and for new members, new participants, come. It's so much fun. It really is. Okay, I have a couple of formal announcements. Our fourth Saturday lunch is coming, is approaching this upcoming Saturday. I think it's Saturday the 24th. We would greatly appreciate donations of personal care items, not too messy or gooey dessert items like cookies. The cookies aren't gooey, that's what we want, cookies. A dollar or two to help defray some grocery costs, your presence to help set up, serve, distribute, clean up, and that's it. This will be the last Saturday. I won't be able to make it, but I'll be back in February, so good. Another announcement. Members of the History and Heritage Committee of the Mid-America Region of the UUA, Unitarian Universalist Association, are developing vignettes about early Unitarian and Universalist churches in the Midwest. Our church was chosen as one of the first churches to be written about, and there are a few copies of the vignette on the desk in the worker room if anyone would like to take one. The vignette will be posted on our church homepage at some point. Thank you, Mary, for that announcement.
Also from Sayre, wave your hand. And from our youth group, raise your hands. Where are you at? All right. Please join the First Unitarian Universalist Youth Group as they present a special night of dancing and fun, Friday, March 20th at 7 p.m. This is an all-ages, costumes-encouraged dance to benefit Camp Fest 5, a worthy cause. Come dressed in your favorite decade's prom wear. $5 suggested donation, more if you can, less if you can't. Bring a snack to share and BYOB. Lemonade, water, and coffee provided. Also, Juliet and I, Sayre, would like to get up and sing the announcement song and make the Camp Fest announcement. Ah, I see what happened.
See,
this is what happens when I don't read the announcements before worship. In addition, I want to remind folks that March 14th on Saturday, we will be having our Covenant workshop. The covenant is created by the voices here in the community, and every member of this community, be they members or friends, will be held accountable to it. So if you want your voice to be included, please be there. Our children and youth will have care provided and will also be creating their opinion of what should be in our covenant. So everyone is highly encouraged. Make sure you write that date down, March 14th. It is a Saturday, I'm sorry, from 10 until 4. Thank you.
It's not fourth Saturday, it's all good. Okay, we begin our service this morning with a prelude. Thank you, Rachel. The circle of love and justice, come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy.
I need Juliet to assist, and Robin, you guys will do this after me. The words are up there, but wait and repeat them after me. This morning's chalice is being lit by Sam Berkeley. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation. The power of love to heal what is broken.
The power of love to heal what is broken.
And to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Okay. So we practice this. So you got the Spanish down? Ready to try this? So please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 188, Come Come Whoever You Are. We will sing it in Spanish and then in English. To do what I'm doing. And if you can't snap, just tap one finger on the fuse. Keep doing it. Think about what that sounds like. And now Juliet has a story for us.
So this morning I'm going to be telling you the story of Ida B. Wells. Ida Bell Wells was born on the 16th of July in 1862 in Holly Springs, Mississippi. The first child of James Wells and his wife Elizabeth was a beautiful, bright-eyed, and healthy child. Still, there was much to worry about. James Wells, although a skilled carpenter, was legally a slave. And so was his wife. 3 years later, the Constitution of the United States was changed, and the 13th Amendment made slavery illegal. All of the black people of Holly Springs were now free. Over the next few years, young Ida was joined by three brothers and three sisters. The Wells children were taught to be responsible for one another and the family home. Each child had chores to do around the house. When the Methodists started a school in Holly Springs, James Wells made sure that his children attended. Our job was to go to school and learn all we could, Ida would say later. My mother went along to school with us until she learned how to read the Bible. After that, she visited the school regularly to see how we were getting along. Encouraged by both of her parents, Ida became a good student. She could handle schoolwork better even than some of the adults who were just learning to read after a lifetime of working in the cotton fields. But Ida saw that life was not good for all black people. There were places that black people could not enter and jobs they could not get. If blacks were accused of crimes, they often would not get a trial, and some were even killed by angry white mobs. When a person was killed in this manner, it was called a lynching. And Ida saw the sadness and fear caused by lynchings. In 1877, 16-year-old Ida was visiting her grandmother in another part of Mississippi when she learned that yellow fever had struck Holly Springs. her parents and brother died. It wouldn't be easy, Ida knew. They could live in the house that her parents owned and would have the small savings that James Wells had carefully put aside. Ida decided to take a test to become a teacher. And after passing that test, Ida taught in a small town 6 miles away from Holly Springs. Ida's aunt Fanny lived in Memphis, Tennessee, 43 miles to the north of Holly Springs. There were more teaching opportunities there. And in 1881, Ida, now 19, moved to Memphis with two of her sisters. Teaching was just as hard there, and Ida had to travel by train to get to her job. One day, Ida took a seat in the ladies' coach of the train. The conductor refused to take her ticket and told her to move to the smoking car. Ida knew that the conductor wanted her to move because she was black, and she refused. The conductor tried to pull her out of her seat. Ida was small. She braced her feet against the seat in front of him, and when the conductor put his hand on her arm, she bit him. The conductor got two strong men together, and together they dragged Ida from the car. Ida, very upset, left the train and went back to Memphis. Ida decided to sue the railroad. She won her case in court and was awarded $500. The local newspaper, the Memphis Appeal Avalanche, ran the story. The headline read, "Darky Damsel Gets Damages." Ida also wrote about the incident in her church paper, The Living Way. Judge Pierce, who was an ex-Union soldier from Minnesota, awarded me damages of $500. Later, the court's decision was reversed, and Ida did not receive the money she won in court. But she did see how people reacted to the article she had written. Ida continued to write for her church paper, and soon black newspapers all around the country began to carry her essays. She wrote under the name Iola and was the Princess of the Press. By 1889, Ida had stopped teaching and was writing full time. She even became part owner of a newspaper called Free Speech and Highlight. In August of 1892, both her sharp pen and her nerve would be put to the test.
Something's coming. How many folks have know the story of Ida B. Wells? Some Juliet, yes. A few of you, yeah. The thing that I find interesting about Martin Luther King Day is that we take so much time to celebrate the life of one man and kind of forget that there were hundreds of years of people before him who stood up and spoke and fought against injustice. And so often people hear about Rosa Parks and say she was the first woman to sit down on a bus, which is so far from the truth. African-American women had been arrested for sitting down on buses and trains for at least 50 years prior to the time that Rosa sat down. And Ida B. Wells, of course, in the late 1800s, was one of those people. And today, if she had bit the conductor, somehow I don't think just leaving the train would have been an option. Any of you bitten someone because of injustice? Not since I was very small. But Ida B. Wells was one of those people who had a skill and a talent for writing. And she was well known. And in fact, she would even come up to East St. Louis and to St. Louis and write about some of the mobs and lynchings that happened there. She traveled all over the country, and she spoke out and shared what was going on with the African-American people. Because just because we say slavery is over doesn't mean we start treating each other nicely, right? Do you ever get really, really mad at someone, so mad you don't think you're ever going to like them again? It's really hard to get to a place where you like them again, right? Has anybody ever been really mad at someone and then worked to a place where you really like them again? If you're married, you better have your hand up. Come on. All right? The truth is that it is difficult to do that as individuals, and it's even harder as communities. And so it took years, and African Americans were treated horribly by people, particularly people who are white. And Ida B. Wells was one of the first people to start to say no. And it was because of the work of people like her, and Baird Rustin, and A. Philip Randolph, and many, many others, that Martin Luther King Jr. was able to stand up and say no more, and to get a community organized together to say no more. So that is the beginning of our story.
I invite you now to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There'll be a time to share concerns and sorrows in a few minutes.
Today, the 18th of January, is my wife's birthday. She's 79 years old today. You don't see her very often because she can't get up in the morning, but one of these times she'll be here in the evening.
Hi, I have two things. Some months ago, you may remember, I shared a former student of mine who was having some really severe problems and had to go to a residential facility. He's supposed to be coming home the next few weeks, so I'm really, really happy that he's doing better. And my other joy is that Jamie's here today.
Yay! I actually have a joy. If anybody's interested in some wonderful classical music, this evening Margaret is performing at Webster University's Community Music School with the Young People's Symphonic Orchestra. They're doing Beethoven's Second Symphony and Las Esclaves Felices, I think. Did I say that correct?
No.
All right. Something along that line, but it's really pretty. It's free. It's 6 o'clock at the Community Music School in Webster, so if you can take the time to do it, please come join. Okay, anybody else? All right. I invite you now to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
I'm now in a nursing home in Wood River. I can't think of the name of it.
Okay. I want to share that my uncle Art died this week. He was one of those people who was a mentor and cheerleader for hundreds. You know, every time you saw him, you just felt good about life. And I'll be driving up to Indiana tonight so I can be with my family tomorrow, and I'll be back on Tuesday. But certainly any prayers, blessings, or contemplations for my family are welcome. Thank you.
May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, because a burden shared becomes a load lightened.
I invite you to join me now in a guided meditation. I invite you to get comfortable in your seats. Pay attention to the feel of the pew against your body. Notice the sounds around you, the smells. And I invite you to turn and focus on your breathing. Particularly focus on the air as it comes in through your nose or as it reaches the bottom of your lungs. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in
And out. Maybe take a deep breath in and then hold it. In. Hold. Out. One more time. In. Hold. Out. Now one last time so your neighbor can hear you. In. And out. I invite you to imagine a place that you consider to be particularly safe, a place that is yours and yours alone. Perhaps it is a forest or a cave or your bedroom. Maybe you're on a planet in a far distant solar system, or a bird flying in the sky, or some place of your imagination. I invite you to look around your place and notice what objects are with you in this safe space. And as you look around, I invite you to pick up one object that has particular meaning to you. Imagine how that object feels in your hands. Is it heavy or light? Could you crush it? Or is it impenetrable? And thinking about this object, imagine what it does to help you feel safe and at home. Carrying this object, I invite you to walk out of your safe place onto a path. And as you walk along the path, you come across someone who needs to feel safe and comforted. And I invite you to share your sacred object with them. Say some words of comfort to them. When you feel like they are feeling safe and comforted, I invite you to walk back along the path into your safe place. And to relax on something comfy. A beanbag, your bed, a big stuffed animal, your parents' arms. Just feel that safety and that connection. And know in a world that's sometimes scary and terrifying or turbulent, or where we may feel afraid, like things could change any minute, that this safe place is always here for you. And as you are ready, I invite you to leave your safe place and come back into this place, focusing on your breathing again. I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. One more time, in and out. May it be so. But you in joining singing our meditation hymn, Spirit of Love.
Thank you.
As we gather today's collection, may we consider it an act of thanksgiving. We give of our money not as obligation, but as a blessing with gratitude for the gifts of the people here gathered, of this beautiful building, and the future. So we give in thanksgiving as we are able to support our collected hearts, minds, and hands. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given.
I invite you to join in reciting the offertory blessing printed on the wall above. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. Keep doing that. In just this half of the room. That side, keep doing this. This side, do this. And this side, join in doing this. And this side, stomp your feet. And this side.
Story continues. The People's Grocery Store was owned by three of Ida's friends. A dispute occurred between the three and some white men who did not like the idea that black men owned the store. A fight ensued. Shots were exchanged. The next morning, hundreds of black men were arrested, including Ida's friends. Several days later, the store owners were taken from the jail by a white mob and murdered. Ida was filled with grief and anger. She knew that the death of black men were often ignored. Longing for justice, Ida turned to the only weapon she had, her writing. In her articles for Free Speech and Headlight, Ida urged the black people of Memphis to leave town or stop supporting white businesses or riding the white-owned streetcar line. Ida Wells had organized one of the first economic boycotts. When Ida left town to visit New York, her office was invaded by hoodlums and destroyed. That is what opened my eyes to what lynching really was, an excuse to get rid of Negroes who were acquiring wealth and property. Ida was forced to leave Memphis, but she was determined not to be quiet or fearful. She began writing for the New York Age from her new home in Chicago. Her articles exposed the poor treatment of black people, especially black men. More than any other person in America, she spoke and wrote about the crime of lynching. She believed that all Americans, black and white, were entitled to justice. In 1893, she published a book on lynching titled The Red Record. Her good friend Frederick Douglass wrote an introduction to the book. "Dear Miss Wells, brave woman, you have done your people and mine a service which can neither be weighed nor measured." Ida was invited to speak in England and Scotland. She spoke with eloquence and passion about the unfair treatment of black men. In the past 10 years, over 1,000 black men and women, and black men, women, and children have met this violent death at the hands of a white mob, and the rest of America has remained silent, she wrote. In June of 1895, Ida B. Wells married Ferdinand Lee Barnett, an attorney and newspaper publisher. Susan B. Anthony, who fought so hard for women's rights, worried that Ida would give up her life as a crusader for justice. Although she was raising her own family, Ida Wells did not abandon her role as a fighter. In 1900, the Chicago Tribune ran a series of articles recommending school segregation. Ida asked for help from another brave warrior in the fight for social equality, Jane Addams. Miss Addams brought together a group of influential white business people to hear Ida plead her case. Ida Wells convinced them to keep Chicago schools open for all children. In 1909, she was one of the major speakers and organizers of the group that would eventually call themselves the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. Ida Wells understood that among African Americans, there were important differences. Those who were powerful and doing well often weren't willing to make a commitment to help the poorest among them. They wanted to be respectable. Well, Ida Wells wanted to be respectable too, but felt it was her duty to fight for justice. She said, "I'd rather go down in history as one lone Negro who dared to tell the government that it has done a dastardly thing than to save my skin by taking back what I have said." Ida continued her fight for justice by taking the cause of suffrage, her friend Susan B. Anthony's lifelong mission. After talking to Anthony about voting rights, Ida was convinced that women's suffrage was critical to political change for black women. In 1913, Ida created the Alpha Suffrage Club. It was the first voting organization for black women in the state of Illinois. At Woodrow Wilson's presidential inauguration in 1913, Ida and 5,000 other women marched for the right to vote. When white suffragists asked Ida to march in a separate colored section, Ida refused. It took several more years of hard work, but women finally won the vote in 1920. Ida Wells spoke up for what she believed. Her weapons were her keen mind and her pen. Leaders as different as W.E. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey, the black nationalist, consulted her. And in 1930, feeling that the candidates for state legislature in Illinois were not doing enough for the people, she ran for the state Senate. She didn't win the race, but again, her clear and passionate voice was heard. The following year, on the 25th of March, Ida B. Wells died. For more than half a century, this dynamic, intelligent woman used her writing skills to promote freedom, safety, and justice. She made America a better place.
What was that?
Rain.
Rain. Did you already know we were doing rain? That's cheating.
I didn't, but I figured it out.
Ah, okay. Sorry, I'm picking on the DRE son here. Thank you for getting it, yes. rain. It's a thunderstorm. The thing about justice work is it's a lot like a thunderstorm. It starts off with soft voices. Just a few little drops here and there. Ida B. Wells was one of those drops. And then it gets louder as more and more people are speaking and being arrested and doing the things that they need to do to affect change. And then it gets really loud. And that loud point is when Martin Luther King showed up on the scene in the 1960s. But there were a lot of little raindrops that led up to that point. And then we had a downpour and thunder and lightning, and in that time shots were fired and people were hurt. One of our ministers, Reverend James Reed, was killed. One of our members from Tennessee, Leola, I did it again. See, I told you, I wouldn't remember it. Viuza, there we go. Also died driving African Americans to voting booths. People survived a storm. And then, as all storms do, it got quieter. But what do we know about thunderstorms? They always come back. There's always something else to stand for. What are some of the justice issues we should stand for now? And I'm specifically asking you, if you are younger than the age of 15, who here is under the age of 15? What are some justice issues we should be speaking about? Oh, I know you guys know some of them. Be loud and proud. Loud and proud.
Ferguson,
okay. Anybody standing up for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights? Okay. What about women's rights? Rights of immigrants? People in poverty? What else? Any age now?
World citizenship.
World citizenship. World peace, education. The right of veterans. We'll be talking about that next week.
Clean water.
Clean water. The environment, the earth. The rights of children. The rights of seniors.
Religious freedom.
That's a big one. So there's all kinds of things that we stand up for, right? Which means there's all kinds of thunderstorms. Because the one thing that is true is we don't like change. Who here likes change? Uh-huh, okay. Look around, those are your troublemakers. But we don't like change, which means when we want to stand up and say this justice thing needs to change or be different, it's hard. Sometimes it requires those thunderstorms. But the thing I know about thunderstorms, yeah, sometimes they cause a branch to fall, but most of the time, we're okay, aren't we? It just feels more dangerous than it is. And that's when it's important to remember that safe place. Oh, you know what? We forgot a big one. People living with disabilities, living with illness, and living with mental illness, and people living with addiction. There are all kinds of people who need our presence and need our justice. And all it takes is wearing the right rain gear. Anybody like to wear the right rain gear? It's different than reindeer. Don't wear the right reindeer. Rain gear. Or if you're like me, I just say heck with it and go puddle jumping. But whatever it is, those storms come, and we can face them together, or we can face them alone. But it takes a few small voices, people like Ida B. Wells, to start to say, cheep, 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 something's wrong here. And to begin to heal our world. So please learn more about Ida B. Wells, learn more about the many African Americans whose lives made it possible for Martin Luther King Jr. to be alive and for us to have some of the freedoms that we have today. May it be so. So who wants to help me create a thunderstorm? Really? The adults are like, not again. One last time. Thunder Park. Anybody know the name of the African-American National Anthem? African-American National Anthem. There you go. It is Lift Every Voice and Sing. It was written by and for the African-American community and was sung so frequently in the Civil Rights Movement that it became the Black National Anthem. And so thinking about all that Ida B. Wells went through, all that Martin Luther King Jr. and African-Americans all throughout our history have been through, I want you to think about the words and what they mean to that community. And if you're from that community, of course, I hope it speaks to your soul. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 149. Robin extinguishes our chalice. I invite you to turn and face across the aisle, or across the chandelier, sorry, towards your neighbors. Some of you love this part, some of you hate it. For those of you who hate it, please do it for those who really find meaning out of it. Take a look out around the room. This is our community, drop by drop. Individually, we might just blotch the ground a little. But our drops together create a world transformed by our care, our presence, and our love. As we begin these 30 days of standing on the side of love, as we begin a month of looking at injustice and social justice and the rights of those who often are too often ignored. May we know that together we can transform the world, drop by drop, and make this church a giant puddle to be reckoned with. May it be so. Blessed be.